Hey, this is Jim McDonald. Before we get started, I want to remind everybody to leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We really appreciate those. Also, please support our sponsors, BSN, HowMuchABench.net, ThePowerMagazine.com, and CavemanCoffeeCo.com. This episode is also brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at ThePowerCast.com/audible. That's ThePowerCast.com/audible. If you listen to a lot of podcasts, you might want to try checking out an audiobook every once in a while to help feed your brain a little bit more, I don't know, organized fashion than we can do here. And now let's start the music.
Yep.
Still need a new intro.
Well, Matt Nickerson's so fat, too.
This is live. Chad could do one. His voice is pretty good. This is
Mark Bell's Power Chad Magazine. Wesley Smith.
Yeah. Sponsored by Power Magazine. That's pretty good intro voice.
You don't want Rhino to do it with that high pitch and lisp. Look for BSN products and body. Sound like Mike Tyson.
Alongside Silent Mike and Jim McDee. Here's your host, Mark Bell.
Stone Cold to do your intro.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be amazing.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, Stone Cold intro.
You gotta get him in here.
Goddamn, Stone Cold Steve Austin, son of a bitch. Yeah. Texas Rattlesnake. You went on his podcast before, right?
Yeah, it was great. You know, the great thing about Steve is he is who he is.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah.
On stage, in his living room, he's the same guy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like kind of weird to like be next to him and shit. You're like, he's gonna give me a fucking stunner.
Yeah, Mark and I were there like drinking coffee.
He's gonna kick me in the stomach and give me a stunner. I know how this goes.
Yeah, he's asking
it a million times.
Our lifting or our diet or how we like our coffee. And he just starts yelling at you. You know, he doesn't even mean to. Like, you want some creamer? Like, what the fuck?
Are you He'll be like, what's going on with Flex Wheeler? Is he still around? You're like, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course he's around. Yeah. He'll just start naming random bodybuilders, but yeah, he loves it. He's way into it. He probably talked to you forever about it.
Yeah, we did. We had a good chat about it.
Probably listed off like every old bodybuilder you can think of. Anyway, we're here today with Stan the Rhino Efferding, and he's got some milk and some pickles for those of you that are only listening to the podcast.
Yeah,
what's going on with
secret?
This milk and pickles?
This is an honor of and celebration for the new the gay marriage ruling.
We have,
pickles and milk. Actually,
I've been celebrating this for years.
Actually, I've been touting the benefits of sodium in all of my seminars, and one of the easy ways to get some extra salt in is
pickles. Does sodium make you bloated?
No. Sodium's a great performance enhancer, so as an athlete, you want plenty of it. And, of course, if this is good enough for Rich Froning, it's good enough for me.
Yeah.
I figure...
He's Oreos, too, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oreos. Bill Kazmaier was also real big on milk. I think almost like a gallon of milk a day. And then there's some people that are proponents of like a gallon of milk a day.
Yeah.
Just try to gain some size. Is it whole milk?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I used to do that too when I was a younger man. I was in an expo the last 2 days. This is one of the ways I survived the expos. It's pickles, whole milk, cheese. Obviously, you try and put together your chicken and rice combos when you can. But when you're standing on your feet for 10 hours for 2 days straight.
And even though you're huge and jacked nowadays, you used to be skinny, right?
That's right. Real
skinny.
What
was a young Rhino looking like?
Ooh. Boy, I got to college. I was 135 pounds. Couldn't bench 135.
Wow. And look, you looked like Silent Mike does right now, probably.
Yeah. Well, I've said it before. We didn't have the advantage of the internet back then. And so you're eating bodybuilder diets.
Right.
You're eating chicken breasts.
And analog porn.
Yes, that was
Digiporn.
Yeah.
No, you actually had to do rentals back
looks
then.
Looks like Nintendo.
VHS cassettes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and you had to always fix the tracking.
And rewind it before you return it. That was one of the rules.
Yep. Be kind and rewind.
What about breast milk? I've read articles on breast milk.
I haven't heard. I'm not sure if we want to venture into that conversation.
Have you ever tried it?
Somebody's tried it out there.
He's just smiling. That means he's tried it.
Somehow I knew we'd end up here.
Yeah.
Always comes back to boobs.
Start here.
Dicks.
End here.
Poop. Yeah, when I was 20, I swear, like, oh, it's got more HGH. Like, you got to find it. My buddy comes up to me like, bro, we got to find some breast milk. We start Googling how to get breast milk.
I think in Mad Max, they're drinking it.
Yeah.
They're drinking
breast
milk, right?
It was like 35 bucks a gallon. I was like in college, like, no, man, can't get the gains.
The sad thing is, though, as we talk about this stuff, and now people are actually going to try it.
I know.
That's good thing I just started a website, breastmilkforyou.com, selling it. Yeah, breast milk by Silent Mike. It's actually from Smelly.
Make sure you try that out.
You should have put a sticker on the back of this. It could have been your product.
What's like does the milk just help you keep your weight on, or if you know if you're not constantly fueling your body, do you tend to lose weight?
I do, yeah, particularly, you know, hydration and calories, and it's just an easy way throughout the day when you're on your feet not to have to stop and slog down a meal with customers right. coming by, and so it was real convenient for me. I just keep it in a cooler, and you know, I had some left over, figured I'd bring it in here.
What are some other kind of easy things to, you know, easy access foods that you're a fan of?
You know, cheese is another big one, and that's low in lactose.
Just like a cheese stick, or
just a cheese stick? Yeah, I'm from Oregon, so obviously I like the Tillamook cheese. That's a great one up there.
That shit's great. Cheddar
and I'll always grab a block of that, some slices, and I'll nibble on those. Some people have lactose intolerance, so that's a good option. Get you plenty of fat, plenty of protein. It's a good snack, and if you're on your feet all day, so that's a good one. I could keep in my cooler during the day.
And for you, you're not really too worried about like fat calories. You don't really probably eat.
No, never concerned about fat calories.
What does fat do? Because I think like some people are kind of nervous about it, like you know, especially guys that are eating carbohydrates, some guys that follow like flexible dieting rules, their diet only allows for so much fat sometimes, just kind of depending on what they're doing. So what does the fat kind of do for you?
Well, I mean, fats are very important. They have a lot of advantages for athletes in particular, you know, cholesterol-based animal fats in particular. Cholesterol being the source of manufacturing testosterone in the body.
Awesome.
You know, fats, you know, it just depends on the athlete
right.
as well. Now, you get an ectomorph, and he's going to be really high in fats.
Right.
You get an endomorph, and you might modify those a little bit so that he doesn't...
For taking someone like Silent Mike size, what would you do with somebody like him who wants to, let's say, gain 10 pounds?
Well, you know, if it's a classic ectomorph, which is what I was trying to gain weight,
right.
One of the things that I've done that people might not consider...
Is that usually where you start? You usually ask somebody, like, hey, what did you look like as a kid kind of thing?
Yeah, check their family or something.
I try and find out their body type. Try and right. find out, do they easily gain weight? Do they have a hard time gaining
gotcha.
Weight?
Gotcha.
And then what their goals are, you know, if they have a weight class or if, you know, what kind of athlete they are. But if specifically we're talking about powerlifters or bodybuilders and their body type, you know, here's a trick that I've used for ectomorphs that's been really successful, including myself. Historically, you've always tried to jam in about as much protein as you can. Well, that can be a detriment for gaining weight for an ectomorph. And so I try and bring the protein down to a gram per pound or a little less, maybe.
Why do you think it's a detriment?
You just get too full or something?
Well, because it has a high thermic value.
Oh, okay.
So the more you eat, the faster your metabolism increases.
And, right.
You know, we've seen some studies where you can add 800 calories a day of protein and not gain any weight.
Wow.
In some instances, really? And particularly for ectomorphs. And so what I try and do is get them to bring that protein down. Now, it's hard to do. You got to have higher fat animal sources such as eggs.
Need a little bacon, maybe.
Bacon is another great one. Whole milk is another great one. And if I could get them to bring their proteins down to under a gram per pound and raise their fats up drastically, then using things like cheese and whole milk and even butter would be another great one to add
right.
in there. Then they can realize the weight gain that they need because they,
right.
they tend not to be able to maintain a calorie surplus because of their metabolism.
Is
so
that
fast.
Something you thought was possible, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, or is it something you kind of stumbled upon more recently?
You know, I've worked on that for at least the last 10 years with
okay.
myself. Now,
right.
I didn't know that.
Because it just sounds like a... It sounds like it wouldn't work. You know,
sounds
what I mean?
Counterintuitive because everybody to gain weight, particularly
yeah.
muscle, you want to increase protein.
Yeah, you want some carbs and some protein, right? Everybody
right.
kind of knows the basis of that, right?
Yeah, every magazine I think I read growing up said 2 grams per pound of body weight.
Right.
But I think it's Eric Helms did a study and said it might only be to maintain your muscle mass while dieting. It might only be more like a gram per kilo of body weight, which is
really
almost like a half.
What matters more is how your specific body responds to the food that you take in. It's not
right.
what you eat; it's what you utilize and how it affects your body.
Yeah, some guys I don't think realize that. Some guys will just be shitting themselves all day long.
Yeah,
they'll be farting all the time, and it's like, well, if the food is upsetting your stomach that bad, then maybe you got to take a look at what you're eating.
Absolutely, and you know, now if we jump onto the other end of the group that, like you talk about, that's eating anything and everything, particularly if you tend to be an endomorph and you have to and you might gain more fat, then you've got to be cautious about, are you utilizing the foods that you eat in an efficient fashion?
Right.
And that's why I, you know, particularly for performance athletes, now mind you can't say anything about nutrition and cover a large swath of people.
Right.
Everybody's different, specific for their sport, their goals, their body type.
There's some guys that never worry about it. They look awesome.
Yeah. Right? They might have that mesomorph type of body where they're going to look great no matter what.
Right.
But we try and focus on elite performance athletics. How do you reach your best, you know?
The fastest.
And some people do have a predisposition to be stronger, to be leaner, more muscular, et cetera, et cetera.
Now we're talking about Silent Mike.
Mm-hmm. Well, even those folks, to reach their maximum, now certainly they can do just about anything and be better than most people.
Right.
Because they have that predisposition. We talked about the genetics being probably the primary factor that, you know, you can work with some people for years and they probably aren't going to be a world-class athlete.
As right.
Those folks. But when you get a guy that's particularly talented, and now you try and maximize his performance through nutrition, then I think some of the things you want to focus on is how can you increase their utilization of certain foods? And what I try and do is find out what feels good on them. Like I notice with me, if I eat a lot of brown rice with the phytic acid, it impedes protein absorption. It can leach valuable nutrients from the body. Mm. It can slow down digestion. So I'm not able to eat as frequently as much.
Right.
And so the same thing happens with a lot of high fiber foods or a lot of, you know, I don't want to demonize any foods, but I'm saying that.
Right.
That
if you were to eat oatmeal in every meal, it's going to be kind of just
gonna
almost
start
quote
bloated,
unquote slowing you down. Yeah,
slowing you down. And I want to be efficient. I want my fuel to burn efficiently, not necessarily quickly, but
right.
I want to utilize most of what I eat,
right?
So that I can eat more again and train more often, eat more often, and just basically
right.
continue to make my engine more efficient, so I can do more often.
On that same topic. Kind of heading towards like glycemic index and all that, talking about brown rice, maybe white rice, sweet potatoes, whatever. That's very typical. Like you said, you were trying to gain weight at 130 pounds, probably just eating chicken and broccoli all day and it wasn't having it.
No.
What kind of switched that? And then on top of that, what do you think about like the glycemic index?
Yeah, the glycemic index does not apply to athletes because it's created in the absence of any other food source, proteins and fats.
Too many variables.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it was studied for diabetics. Yeah.
Well, and the American Diabetes Association doesn't even use the glycemic index because you never eat foods in isolation. Rarely do, and certainly as an athlete, you wouldn't eat just a carbohydrate. You'd eat carbohydrates, fats, and proteins together. And plus, you have such an enormous workload as an athlete.
Yeah.
That, insulin spikes are actually good, but those insulin spikes can occur from protein sources as well. So you can't just look solely at your carbohydrate source. And then athletes are different. Like we just talked about ectomorphs and endomorphs.
Right.
You're gonna feed them carbohydrates differently, maybe some different times and maybe some different types and amounts. So everybody's unique in that regard.
Let's talk a little bit about just straight up powerlifting. You know, people talk about what was that, a boner?
There's like eight shelves under me for some reason. There's a whole storage system.
Should probably just take one out or something.
Yeah, there's like 20 different cups down there, and I kicked one.
That's great.
I'm just trying to stretch my hamstring.
You know, I think...
the standing up thing.
Yeah, it's hurting.
I think people, you know, sometimes get confused about what nutrition is really doing for a power lifter because it's kind of all over the map with certain guys being able to do certain things. With kind of no regard to nutrition. Even back in the West Side Barbell days, some of their strongest guys, you know, Dave Tate was doing like a survey on them, and he found out that they were eating like, I don't know, under 200 grams of protein a day, and these are guys that weigh 300-plus pounds easily.
They lived in Ohio. That might be part of the issue.
Yeah, they're eating fucking donuts every day.
They lived above a Waffle House something like that.
But I think where some of the confusion comes in is – when you're talking about like eating for performance, if you're talking about eating for performance and you are a decathlete or you're a CrossFitter or, you know, doing something MMA, doing like a real sport other than powerlifting, you're doing something that takes more than what we do, a lot more than what we do, demands on the body. Do you think like, you know, the type of foods you're putting in your body and stuff like that are going to really actually matter? Between making like a one rep max and missing a one rep max when it comes to powerlifting?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you find is that, yeah, there's some great powerlifters who probably have eaten some terrible diets.
Right.
How much better could they have been? That might be your outlier.
Right.
Those might be the individuals who are going to be great anyhow. And then that, how could you have improved their performance by improving their diet over time?
Right.
And that would be of more interest to me.
Look at Jerry Rice, Michael Jordan. Like, those are guys that they always worked their ass off. But as they got deeper into it, they started paying more attention to their lifting and paying more attention to their nutrition.
People say that about Tim Duncan, who's like an underrated power forward in history, but they say he's eaten perfect for the last like 10 years. And
yeah,
now he's like 39.
Longevity.
Yeah, he's 39 and still the best in the league. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But people do it different ways. You know, you got, Chad Wesley Smith is a big boy. He's like 370 pounds. It seems like he's kind of shifted his gears toward eating much better as of late. But he probably didn't get to 370 pounds
by eating really well.
Yeah.
I guess my point would be is that, you know, nutrition, although you may not see an immediate impact on your strength gains, it can impact you over a long period of time because you can build your body up kind of the way you did. So you can either look like you or you can look like a super heavyweight, but the result in the amount of weight that you lift might be about the same.
Yeah, and, you know, Chad's young, too. You can get away with a lot
when
you're in your 20s that you can't get away with when you're in your 40s. It
becomes
more and more important to decrease chronic inflammation when you're in your 40s.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And also, when you're lifting, you got yourself so jacked that you're creating really good leverages. You know what, and that's exactly what the other guys are doing. The guys that say, it's powerlifting. You got to eat whatever you can. You got to weigh 300-plus pounds. I mean, isn't that kind of correct? You know,
build up
your arms, be a certain size and stuff like that.
Yep, that's important that you use your body as a spring for it, you know, against and for itself. And, you know, it's always going to be more beneficial for you to be fully hydrated and basically swollen when you come to a meet. Even when we do weight cuts, we try and put all that weight back on so that people can be full, you know, and hydrated and, for their meets. So I think it's really important to be heavy,
right?
You know, because as soon as you start getting under, say, 12-10% body fat, your performance is gonna suffer significantly.
Right,
it's no question.
That's why we're so weak.
Do you find that in most sports, or is that like pretty much powerlifting?
In terms of sports performance, explosive speed, ability to endure, a lot of impact or the loads that come, the dynamic loads that come from basketball, football, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah, once you get down, there's kind of a general 10% or lower, your performance is going to start to suffer. Like, you know, LeBron in the offseason, we talked about this before, but he had lost a significant amount of weight.
Right.
Said he felt good, said he felt light on his feet. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean you're more explosive or faster.
Right.
You just feel lighter, which is, we all know that feels a little better, a little less strain on the cardiovascular system, et cetera. Well, he struggled at the beginning of the season,
right?
You know, and I even think he suffered an injury at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Well, his secret was just cutting out all carbs, I think. Yeah, he just ate fruit and veggies for his carbs.
And that has a temporary, quote-unquote, health benefit of dropping some weight, but he dropped mostly muscle. And that's what stabilizes you and keeps you healthy. And so you notice as the season went on, he put some of that muscle back on. He was stronger towards the end of the season.
Well, he did have to put a whole team on his back.
Yeah, that's true.
Progressive overload.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, weighted loads. So
took him all the way to the finals, but couldn't make it.
Yeah, couldn't quite get himself out of that situation. What do we got going on with the cooler? I know we talked about it in previous podcasts and stuff like that, but what have you been doing with it recently?
You know, we've been traveling around. The cooler, we just brought it out about 3 months ago. Brought it to market. We've been traveling around doing the Europa shows and some expos around the country, and we're getting awesome feedback.
You've been even going out of the country, right?
Yeah, we did. We went to Australia, went to FIBO, and we got a lot more ahead on our plate this year. We got a couple more Europas, the Olympia, the Arnold next year. Obviously, we've got to get the word out, get people educated, get them informed about it.
Right.
You know, Flex and I both have kids in high school that are play football.
So
originally the idea was we wanted them to be able to go to practice and have lots of water, because I'm in Vegas, he's in California, it's hot during the summertime, the kids are out there training. But as most parents know now, after many, many years and all the research that's been out there, immediately following training, it's nice it's beneficial to have your kids get some sort of nutrition, some sort of carbs and protein. But we didn't know how to keep that carbs and protein stable, particularly if it was a perishable, like a chocolate milk or whatever else, or even some fruit and cheese sticks, whatever. So we designed the cooler so that the shaker bottle drops down inside of the middle of the cooler.
Right.
So you've got your ice water that you poured in here and you drink out of it, and then the shaker bottle drops down into the middle and stays cold while you're right. training. And it drops down into a second shaker bottle that holds,
powder
and carb
powder.
So you can make basically three drinks, a pre-intra and post, all in one container, and it stays cold. It's one thing that's not out on the market. Everybody's got a shaker bottle, and they've got 15 unscrewing, little cups that unscrew from the bottom. Your shaker bottle's like this.
It's like a Russian doll.
Yeah. Your shaker bottle's 7 feet tall Russian when you walk doll. Into the gym, and it's got 19 compartments to unscrew, but it's all warm. There's no way to keep that stuff cold.
Right.
So now we've got a gallon of cold water. We've got a pre-workout and a post-workout that all stays cold for you. So people have been responding really well, and they come up to the booth, and when they see how it works, their eyes just bug out.
Yeah, they got to kind of see it firsthand. Otherwise, they probably don't understand. Even
it's so
if you
new to the market.
It,
there's nothing else like it. They see it, and they're like, bam, they understand that.
That's cool.
Wow, this is cool. So now they don't have to two-fist a gallon jug of warm water around the gym. That, imagine leaving that in your car in Vegas for an hour or two.
You'd be drinking cheese.
Right. And then they got to have their Monster or whatever they've got for their pre-workout.
Right.
And then they got their little plastic baggie for their post-workout, wherever they keep that.
Right.
And they're, lobbing it around from bench to bench to bench throughout their workout session.
Right.
So we figure we solved all of that with this by providing three different options all in one, and it stays cold. So I can leave this thing in my car for hours and still have cold ice water and still have a drink in there if I need it.
What was the process of getting something like that going? Because it didn't exist before.
It didn't exist, and I looked online. I tried to find something for it. I used to take a gallon jug.
Going into it, once you had the concept, how long did you think it would take you to kind of find what you're looking for?
I couldn't find anything like it, so I had to design and build it. And the process is you get an engineer and you get on a computer program and do a CAD drawing, and you find a manufacturer that can build it. That process was very lengthy because I was dealing with the...
I think my brother's friend might have made some animation for you too, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Excellent. That very
Greg
helpful
Young
to market the product.
Edit Prescription Thugs. Shout out to him.
Yeah. Oh, he did a fantastic job. I can't use him anymore. He's so famous now. I can't afford him.
He's been in New York, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's working on a ton of movies, Chris said.
Yeah.
That's great. Well-deserved, too. I got to find somebody else that's hungry that can work for next to nothing so I can pay them.
College kids.
Yeah.
I think I know somebody. We'll talk after.
We'll work on it.
Yeah.
Then you got to try and get a... get your vision across to, in my case, I wanted to manufacture it in China because it's so much more affordable. I can bring it here at a price point that stores can sell and customers can afford.
It's very unpatriotic of you, son of a bitch,
especially
the 4th of July.
I hate it. And I'll be honest with you, I went to one of the major manufacturers. They wanted $500,000 just to do the tooling, just to build.
Yeah, but you're rich. That shouldn't be any problem. We've seen your cribs.
But just the idea of getting started was that's a barrier to entry, obviously. When you can get tooling done in China for $50,000,
right?
It's not even
some of these.
Seriously,
the difference. It was 10 times.
Oh my
times.
God!
I've heard some of these markets that you don't ever think of, like somebody making like blinds for your window or coolers or. A lot of those markets are like that. You just don't ever think about it, and then you try to get yourself into it, and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, the cost is
this is a fucking big deal.
I've heard all the labor laws in China have changed. Like, it's not like everyone here thinks like, oh, now it's like six-year-olds, making
his girlfriend's Chinese, by the way.
Yeah, she's half Chinese. So I make her manufacture mostly.
Yeah, but I've heard China's really stepped it up. It's some of the other countries, maybe Taiwan and some other stuff, that is still a little dirty. But I've heard China's raised their regulations a lot.
We went to a Walmart facility, and they're under heavy scrutiny, obviously all the time, and to make sure that we got the BPA free and that we had the manufacturer guidelines such that we don't have underage labor, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And that seems to be the gold
standard. You can just put the sticker on yourself and say American made.
Yeah.
Everybody else does.
The sticker made by me personally and just made a bunch of video of that.
Or just the stickers made in America.
Just finished another one.
Yeah. Well, it was quite a process, going back and forth with the language barrier and everything else about what I'd like it to do. What you do find out, what you benefit from in the United States, is that people are creative here, and they're problem solvers. And in China, they're just copycats.
Right.
And I hope I don't offend anybody over there, but just the fact of the matter. Yeah. When I send them this information,
that's how they make their money.
Well, I say, I need it to do this. They don't come back with any ideas. Well, you might try this.
Right. Well, and another problem is once they make it for you, they want to make it for other people.
That's true.
And they'll solicit them. You know, that happens with my products all the time. They'll solicit people. People will get emails saying, oh, yeah, we can make wraps and slingshots.
Yeah, and just like these. Right? Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, that's why I started with a patent attorney. And I was shocked to find out when we did our search that nobody had ever dropped a shaker bottle into a cooler.
Yeah.
It's never been done. There's no patent for it.
People
so now
probably stuck their dick
patent.
In one, but probably never dropped a shaker cup down the middle.
It sounds cold, smelly. I don't know how you'd do that.
We had gone almost 10 minutes without a dick or a titty joke, and so it's good we put that in there.
Yeah, I've got to come back to the baseline. Yeah, every
I'll share text messages from Rhino with you guys.
All this cooler talk is putting people to sleep. But now
it's almost always a dick or balls or something in there.
Now that you're listening again, let's talk about the cooler.
dick, cooler.
So, have you had any? To your knowledge, have you had anybody buy it for their, basically for their kid, maybe their high school kid, not to take it to a practice, but just so that they have their lunch with them and they have water
all
and
sorts
all that
of
stuff.
Reasons. I'm finding that
to throw some food
I can
in there.
Never predict my customer when they walk up. I don't look for a bodybuilder, a powerlifter, a CrossFitter. That not necessarily be my customer.
Right? Yeah.
You know, you just look for a mom and dad, and in the age group doesn't matter, and the level of fitness doesn't matter. They all think that hydration's important. I get a lot of construction workers that are out on site all day, and they don't have this kind of option to have a Gatorade and to have a protein shake and to have their ice water all
yogurt
together.
Yogurt in there or whatever.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. So
whatever
I get
you can fit inside the cup.
All kinds of different folks will come up, whether they're mill workers or in a, you know, of some sort that can't get breaks as often as they'd like and still like to have frequent nutrition.
And anybody
and
doesn't have access to refrigeration during the day.
And then some folks work out at gyms that have refrigerators and microwaves, and you know they don't necessarily need something like that, but it's sure convenient, particularly if you're going to leave it in your car during the day.
Right.
Was there ever a time where you were thinking about just saying, fuck it, this probably isn't going to happen? You went back and forth a couple times, and you're like, I don't even know.
Oh, it was more than a couple times. Yeah, it took almost a year and a half from startup to finish to get the thing.
I think it's important for people to hear that, you know. I remember hearing Dave Tate, say that he almost gave up on Elite Fitness a bunch of times. And other people have a similar experience, you know. With my product, I didn't have to go back and forth a ton, so it wasn't a huge deal. But I did have people tell me that they didn't think it was a good idea. So that was like, I was like, okay, well, that's like three people that told me it's not a good idea. Maybe it's not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I can't tell you how many people told me it wasn't a good idea to lift weights and to bodybuild and to powerlift over the years. And that never, I just, I don't make my decisions based on what other folks' opinions are.
Yeah, Mike. Quit being so fucking negative.
Should I go lift weights or something?
I just never have. And that's what's so reassuring now after I've brought the product to market. And there's a lot of things I'd like to do to improve and change and build a second model that has some variation to it.
I'll just wait till that one comes out.
Yeah. So, but this this has been very well received. People who come up and see it, really love it. We show it to folks. This month we'll show it to the folks at Dick's Sporting Goods and Cabela's and Big
that's
Five.
That's really cool.
Because we think that's the market. There's 30 million kids a year sign up for kids sports.
Right.
It's amazing to think of that.
Well, the water bottle industry has fucking exploded. Like just even getting I would say maybe as of 2 years ago, you'd see people walking around all the time with just a Aquafina bottle, just a regular bottle of water. And now everyone's walking around with, some shit like this.
I wish I had invested in this company a few years ago.
Yeah, Contigo.
Yeah, there's a few out there that do a pretty good job. There's just none that have multiple drinks and that you can keep cold.
Right.
The problem with the water bottle industry is that everything's warm.
Well, it's just water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are a couple drinks that you use or suggest for pre-workout, maybe intra-workout and post-workout?
Yeah, well, what does Chris Duffin suggest for pre-workout? He's got a
whiskey. Yeah. That's intra, I think.
Yeah,
I suppose you could throw some whiskey in the cooler.
A shot before every lift. I mentioned before that when I was competing, I wouldn't take a lot of supplements because I wanted to. If I was going to consume something, I wanted to get the highest impact.
Now, you're kind of like that all the time too. You mentioned that even with like sweets and stuff like that, you're not easily swayed by like pizza and sweets and stuff like that because you want foods that are going to continue to help you get more jacked and perform better.
I've always said that if I'm going to eat something, I'd like it to build muscle. I'd like to have some benefit out of it. If I've got room in my stomach, I'd like to put something in there that's going to provide me a benefit. Yeah. I was just at dinner night before last with my old college roommate. when I got to college, I was all of a buck 35. I was tiny. And I was looking at those bodybuilding magazines or men's fitness magazines, and he was like 215 pounds and jacked. And I was like, God, if I could just get muscles.
I can be like him one day.
Yeah.
And, I'll show him.
And he mentioned last night, of course, we both have families now. Him and his wife and kids came and joined us for dinner. And he mentioned, he was talking about how, you know, I wanted to be big back then. And,
right.
And, he said that he only saw me one time in all the years I knew him drink a cooler. What were those? California coolers?
Oh, yeah.
He says, yeah, I saw Stan drink a California cooler once.
That's great.
Yeah, the point of the story being is that even in college, I was always so disciplined and consistent with respect to trying to eat and sleep and train. I had to be because I was way behind the curve. I didn't have any of those gifts, those genetic.
Any idea where any of that came from? Come from your childhood or something? Or are you just kind of born that way? Or?
I don't know. I've always been kind of type A. I was working at 7-Eleven when I was 12. And
was your dad a hard worker or something, or somebody along the way was?
Mom and dad both, of course. Yeah, they both worked hard. So I just always
kind of saw that.
And you just discover that if you want something bad enough, you know, you have to make the sacrifices. You can be great at anything. You just can't be great at everything. And so I was just focused, you know, on doing that. And I thought, boy, if I, you know, of course, back then you're reading Weider magazines and he's giving you all these tips and advice and whatever. And I'm highlighting and folding pages and I'm just trying to do everything I can to be successful.
Yeah.
And it was same, you know, with everything I try and pursue in life. You can't do it halfway.
Right.
Or you're only going
to get
half.
I know sometimes I'll ask you a question and you'll fire over an article to me.
Yeah.
I'm
I do
like,
that.
How does the guy have time to, you know?
Literally hundreds of them. When I do seminars, I ask people for their email addresses, and I say, well, I'm going to talk about a lot of things today very quickly.
Right.
And I'm going to send you articles that are from, you know, great people in the industry.
There's
who
a lot of awesome information out there.
Yeah. You know,
got Lane Norton and
Lane
just
Norton,
to name a few.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Knuckles, Greg Knuckles.
Yeah, Greg Knuckles.
Greg.
Obviously, Creasy,
Eric
Creasy.
Eric Creasy, yeah.
Of course, Juggernaut and
Chad
puts out a lot
yep.
of stuff. And D Nation's got some good people that write articles right. for them.
I miss
guys
here.
Alan Aragon,
yep.
Brad Schoenfeld. Those
there's,
guys are deep into it.
Great, and with a lot of citations and you know, references to great research.
Right.
And that stuff, you know, obviously I don't have the time to discuss or even to do my own research on that. I have to trust the professional. Same
right.
I come to you or I come to Eddie or we go listen to Boris or Mikhail Kokhlev.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You can get so much information from their 10 or 20 years worth of education and experience that you can utilize.
What I ended up getting from those guys is that you suck.
Yeah. I pretty much get that.
They like... built Stan up really well, and they're like, oh, big fan, you know, and great lifts. And then Misha starts talking about deadlift, and he's like, oh, he's like, I see these videos of efforting, and I shake my head and say, no.
Yeah.
Why do you lift like this?
He says, I watch your videos over and over again, and every time I watch them, I want to fix your form.
Explain that a little bit. You posted a picture on Instagram, I think, and they were trying to get your shins vertical. Was that for like a stiff leg or was that for a regular pull?
Regular pull, yeah. I tried to get my shins more vertical and tried to transfer the load so that it wasn't on my lower back.
Yeah, get in your
so
ass.
It was an assistance and a cueing exercise. He's having us push our calves kind of into this box that was up against the wall.
But for the ladies, he had them push their...
Twerking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was doing all kinds of stuff for the ladies.
Yeah, they had their push their hands into... Or their hammies into his hand.
Did you see that?
It wasn't their hammies.
Yeah,
He was situated under the glutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes he would lay on his back. No,
you can say glutes.
He kind of grabbed your hamstring, and it was like, you know, these need to be bigger. You're not using these as much as
you call them leg
to.
Bicep.
Yeah, I don't think he did, but that's
at least he didn't grab my dick and say it needs to be bigger.
Yeah,
I'm okay
yeah.
with the hamstrings being small. But.
Well, I mean, that is the actual like Latin name is.
Look at that! I fired off my own dick joke.
So. Yeah, there you
see
go.
That? I'm getting used to this. We got
you're
back.
Normal. Yeah,
yeah.
Welcome
part
to be a host. Yeah,
maybe you should just be
move the sack.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things is, you know, and I went and trained with Eddie one summer, and he would say, sit back. Well, sometimes it's hard to envision how that feels until somebody puts you in a position where you have no other option.
Right.
And when I teach deadlift, I talk about that at the point at which you pull that weight, if you let go of the bar, you should probably fall on your ass.
Right.
Now, how do you teach that?
Right.
And like you say, the cueing systems that go with that.
Right.
And that was just an excellent way by setting the box behind, having you lean back first to where you can't fall over but would if the box were removed.
Yeah.
And now, you know, initiate your pull.
I thought the principles that they had of and they were a lot different than I thought. I've heard of Shaco's system and stuff before, and I've heard of the low percentages, but I didn't really realize that they are finding a lot of different ways to make the exercises harder. So when they say 70%, you don't really realize that they paused their squat in three different spots and did three reps.
Yeah.
That's a whole other fucking ball
double
game.
Pause on the deadlift and then an eccentric, you know, slow.
Yeah. Holy slow shit. Down.
So now you're not talking about 70% anymore by its, you know, standard definition.
Yeah.
You're talking about they have created a harder.
Yeah.
It's probably RPE 9.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I mean, an eccentric deadlift is hard.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I have to say this about the, you know, with Boris and Mikhail, you know, we talked about this last night a little bit. Here's a guy, Mikhail, who trained on the Olympic weightlifting team for probably a decade.
Yeah.
That's very different than bodybuilding. It's very different than powerlifting, particularly in the United States, where you just right. kind of, you know, join your buddies and lift heavy weights. With that kind of discipline and consistency and those kinds of tracking mechanisms, and I mean, it's your whole world.
Yeah.
And so
that's like a young kid going to Charles Glass and having Flex Wheeler and a whole team around him from the time he's like a little kid. Yeah.
Yeah. And every day trying to you know, improve and design things for you, you know, around the clock. But and the technique involved. They brought the technique from weightlifting into powerlifting.
Right.
And they're such sticklers on that. You know, in weightlifting in most foreign countries, when kids compete, they don't compete for weight. They compete for technique. It's like ice skating judging.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. That you have a broomstick or yeah, that you can right. only lift maybe the bar or 5 pounds or something. And it's really what they do is they judge you. They score you. You win competitions based on the perfection of your technique.
Is that until you reach a certain age? And then
until you reach
the weight?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And by then now you've got this, right. you know, this foundation that allows you to be much greater than you could be if you were a hack like me and you were just, you know, and I've always said that I was just a bodybuilder that was lifting heavy weights. Look, my first powerlifting competition, which I didn't really even train for, I was just lifting heavy weights in the gym.
Right.
I totaled 2,000 pounds. I was just a strong guy. And my form in that competition was horrendous. I mean, actually, who was judging that competition?
It was an APA meet, right?
It was an APA meet. The judge was, boy, he's still around. He was an old pro strongman, and I don't know why I'm forgetting his name. He still throws these big meets down in Vegas and the like.
Oh, is that, oh, shit. He's in Vegas. Is that not Nick Best? He's not in
no,
Vegas.
No, no. It's terrible that I've forgotten because it's been so many years. But the point is he was the head judge, and I was squatting, and I had a couple of my football friends side spotting, and they'd never side spotted before. You know, we. And so oops. I went down on the squat, and coming up, I lurched forward, as, you know, I tend to do.
Yeah.
And I took a full step, and we were on a stage, and he was sitting right in front of me. And his eyeballs got this big, and he rolled back, and he almost fell out of his chair backwards because he thought I was taking a nosedive into the audience. But, you know, the point being is that you know, it wasn't until I came to you almost 15 years later
right.
where you took – I totaled 2,000 in my first meet in 1996.
Right.
In 2008, 2070. Not much improvement there.
Yeah.
Now, when you're a bodybuilder lifting heavy weights, that's about all you can expect is to reach your a particular level of strength and kind of maintain that. But if you want to be at a really elite level, then you need to start to spend a lot of time focusing on rebuilding your technique. And when I came to you, even with the limited amount of time that we spent, to go from 2070 to 2221 with 2 months of specific work.
Yes, 8 weeks.
Pretty remarkable. I wasn't any stronger.
And a huge part of what we did was the exact same thing that they were talking about. We were just masking things in a different way.
Yeah.
Safety squat bar with chains, you know, different things like that to push you. But you had no idea what you were lifting either.
Yeah. And when we were videotaping my lifts and we were right. watching them and we were trying to improve on
technique. We did a reverse right. band deadlifts and things like that. And you did, I think, like 765 or something like that for a double.
Yeah.
Helps build confidence. And you're like, oh, I could probably do, you know.
But just in that short period of time, with daily supervision and education and training, you know, specific towards the goal, we made an enormous improvement. My problem is that as soon as we stopped, I went back to bodybuilding. So another bodybuilding show coming. So. Right. I lose all of those cues, all of those real fine motor movements and techniques. And the next time I come back, I might be a little heavier or something, and so we're changing things again. I know that was one of your frustrations going into the meets, is that like a week or 10 days before the meet, I would settle in on my form for the meet.
Right, right.
Because I'd be changing the whole time. I wouldn't practice consistently with that technique, and I said this when I went back and trained with Eric.
You missed that bench in training. It was like one of the only lifts I've seen you miss the whole time you trained with me. I think it was a 600-pound bench. And I was like, dude,
elbows flared.
I was like, your elbows have to be. I kept telling you and telling you and telling you. Then you missed a lift, and you're like, oh, you're like, I think you're right. I got to bring my elbows in. And then you did 606 in the meet, and it was a fucking awesome bench.
People are, you know, they're creatures of habit. They always tend to do what they've always done, or they'll fall into that when they get challenged maximally.
Right.
And if you don't have those cues and those techniques ingrained in you, if it isn't, you know, like they say about Ronda Rousey, if it isn't part of your DNA, then things are going to change under those stressful conditions. And, you know, I had mentioned at the time, I like watching, when I'm back and trained with Eric Lillibridge, is that kid is perfect at what he does.
Yeah.
He is, I mean, for.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. And because that's what he does. That's what he does year round, day in, day
He's
out.
He's a fucking professional.
Absolutely. And that's what you think about when you think about Eddie Cohn. Just an absolute taskmaster. Yeah. You know, just somebody who's just.
Master of sport, as they call it in Russia.
Yep. Exactly. And I never committed myself with that kind of time or consistency to be, you know.
There's some of those principles in bodybuilding, though. I mean, you don't just, like, as you showed me and Silent Mike, you don't just do a curl.
Right.
You don't just do a lat exercise. There's a certain way to perform it. And then the way that you showed us to perform it, we're using a lot less weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, my back's like, still sore.
Yeah, you're like, wait, I want
to. 3 months later. Yeah. 3 months later.
You're like, I want to, like, load the weight up. And you're like, that's not. We can do that, but that's not the correct way to do it. Let's do it the right way and get the maximal results from it.
And you said before that because I've had so much experience knowing how to apply every muscle or affect every muscle in the body, that when you do show me a technique and you tell me what's supposed to, how it's supposed to work.
You picked it up really fast.
And even with Misha on those deadlifts on the box, you know, the third time I pulled that, he drew his hands in the air, turned around, looked at Boris, and he was like, he's got it. You know, and now I'm going to go home and I watched the video. I watched him over and over. I videotaped him doing it. I videotaped me doing it. And so now I'll go home this week and start those box deads until I can fix.
You going to pull 800 again?
I probably think I could.
No, I think you could.
I think I could because I pulled that. I doubled a 765 and I pulled a 771 in that meet a couple months ago.
I think no deadlift bar in training. I think you'll do it. No problem.
Yeah. But I think what happens is.
I think when you get to that deadlift bar, it's just going to feel that much easier.
Well, I found out that that I reached about the maximum I can pull with that current form, because the limiting factor is my lower back starts to bulge out. But if I can use this new form and keep my back flatter and use more glutes and hamstrings, there's a higher end to be had, much higher end when you use more glutes and hamstrings. I'm just stubborn, you know. I just changed something.
We went way off on a giant tangent, but Mike's original question was about.
Did Mike have a question?
About I'm leaving. I hate this show.
Kind of the supplementation of pre-workout, intra-workout, and post-workout.
Okay. Maybe like two or three options for each.
Yeah. Carbs, BCAAs. Yeah. What is it that you're?
That's the standard fare, you know. Nowadays, because you know, I'm not competing necessarily, and I do like to have things that taste good and feel good. While I'm training,
insert cock joke here.
Ben and Jerry's mid-workout.
Right back there. Okay, now that everybody's listening again, we'll start with.
They said dick. Did you hear that? It's fucking awesome. I love this show.
So I'll pop some. Where were we? Well, I'll put
dick.
Some
pre-workout.
I'll put some pre-workout in there. I don't use stimulants. It was interesting to hear that. You know. Mikhail Kokolev's, just say Misha from now on, so I have to keep repeating that.
that's what I do.
Misha's feedback on that, he doesn't use pre-workouts. He doesn't. Right. He thinks that it taxes the body in such a way that he can't draw that power when he needs it.
Yeah. I like the way he described it. He said it's pulling something out of you that shouldn't.
Right.
Like it shouldn't necessarily be there, not for these specific days of just going in and getting a bunch of work done.
Yeah,
I thought that was a good
and then
way
when you get
it.
To the meat, do you have? Can you grab that? And
sometimes you can't.
He feels like as if he can't because he's already exhausted it through all.
He
the training.
He said he felt empty. You go to a meet, and there's nothing deep down inside to really pull from.
Yep. Well, there might be something there on the squat. By the time you deadlift, though, there's nothing there. To
correct.
Pull.
That's,
sure.
100% right. Yeah.
Well, I've just found that it's counterproductive for me, and I know everybody talks about every action has an equal and opposite reaction. If you're taking a stimulant, then your cortisol is going to get released, and now you're. You know, creating all these contrary stimulus in the body, and I know that some folks, you know, they get they work all day long and they get brain tired, you know, at the end of the day,
right?
And they go to the gym and they just feel sluggish, and it might not necessarily be physical sluggishness because they've been sitting or whatever, And you know, my recommendation for that is a little bit of fruit. Get that liver glycogen filled up, so that the brain feeds off of that liver glycogen first, and it's very fast and it's very
nice
efficient.
Banana pre-workout.
A banana or some grapes or some watermelon, something about an hour before you train can really perk you up without a stimulant, without a caffeine, without a some sort of stimulant. Well, then I'll throw in here maybe some BCAAs and some carb powder that I'll drink throughout my workout. I like to stay really hydrated while I train. It's easier to do when you're powerlifting because you don't have the, you know, the all of the HIIT type of training that you might say in CrossFit or the high rep stuff, so you don't get your stomach uncomfortable.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll be honest with you, post-workout for the last couple of years since I'm not competing, I just pop some chocolate milk into the – it's one of the reasons that I like to train is because it tastes so damn good to have a nice ice-cold chocolate milk when you're done training. But if you've got your favorite protein shake, I do take it in, and I know the research suggests that maybe – the post-workout window isn't as important as everybody thinks it is. But I think when you're at an elite level and you are training very, very hard, that you want to try and pull out all the stops.
A bunch of fat guys are getting really excited about chocolate milk. Would that not be a wise choice for some of the endomorphs that are listening?
It just depends on what their goals are and if they have body composition. I never worry about your post-workout nutrition being too heavy in carbohydrates. I'm a fan of loading carbs post-workout, so... you know, big thing for me though is sodium too, and water and carbs, and it's all in chocolate milk, salt, water, carbohydrates, and some protein. Yeah. Not necessarily whole milk post workout. I do the low fat chocolate milk because some of the research suggests that that you like a higher carb to fat ratio or carb to protein ratio even as well, and that the performance benefits are better when you're the carbohydrates are.
How long do you have after a training session? You said it's the post-workout window might be like kind of overhyped. Like, does it really matter if it's a half an hour or 2 hours or 20 minutes?
I think it matters if it's 2 hours, particularly in terms of carbohydrates, and especially if you're doing two-a-day bouts and if you have a high workload like in bodybuilding or CrossFit, et cetera. I think you're going to want to get carved up as quick as you can so you have more energy for that subsequent bout. But, you know, it's not a matter of have to.
I understand.
If it makes you feel stronger and better and you're able to get, for me, it's I'm able to get more total calories in because I keep my frequency, tight.
Right.
It's like sometimes I'll wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and have a meal, go back to bed and have another one at 8. I'm 2 in for the day. And for me, meal frequency is more important than quantity.
Right.
Per meal, because I feel like I more efficiently use the food.
You have about 7 maybe?
Yeah, probably 7 meals a day. I perform better when I have more meals. I've noticed that with me. I've noticed that with athletes I train. A lot of the diet research will suggest whether you eat 3 meals or 6 meals, if the calories are the same, it's going to make no difference in terms of weight loss. I'm focused on performance athletics and at a very high level when I make these recommendations. And so I like to recommend what has made me perform well. And it's one of the questions I always ask people, what foods make you feel strong?
Right.
And, and then from there, I try and increase their frequency because I just think they become more efficient, more hydrated, more their body will utilize those smaller meals faster and more efficiently than a bigger meal, which might slog you down for a while. So those are some of the tactics that I use.
I think what you mentioned there is huge. Like people don't want to draw the lines, but there's a huge line to be drawn for eating maybe, quote unquote, healthy, longevity of life maybe, performance. And then maybe looks more like bodybuilding, like body fat or that, you know, I think they can cross over, you know, correct me if you think differently, they could probably cross over and you can kind of get healthy, look pretty good and be pretty good at whatever you're doing.
But
if you want to be really specific about each one, things might change. And a lot of the studies, like you said, they're not on bodybuilders or necessarily performance. They're on people with diabetes or how do you live longer? How do you avoid cancer and heart problems?
Yeah. And even if they're on people who train regularly, that's not necessarily, it might be more about exercising than training. You know, at an elite level, I just see people's performance, mine and those I train. I see their performance drastically improve when we really push all of these nutrition, quote-unquote, myths or bro sciences that can't be proven on a sedentary population or just an average exercising group.
I don't think they can be proven anywhere just because science doesn't allow you to control that much stuff. You know, like actual tests to run on that are nearly impossible.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, sort of an opinion. We see at this point with CrossFitters, the top CrossFitters, a lot of them have a very similar look to one another. Mm-hmm. They're pretty big. They're very cut. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about, are they on steroids, whatever. But what I keep hearing is we're training in a way that kind of really nobody has trained day in, day out for this long a period of time, and this is what you look like when you do that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's accurate, and I think it's for a number of reasons. I think, and they're not big by a bodybuilder standard.
No, no.
They're very well proportioned, muscular, lean. They look a lot bigger. Rich looks a lot bigger. He's not over 200 pounds, is he?
No.
I think he's 195.
And, well, yeah, right in there. And he looks huge. He looks like he's 230.
Yeah.
He looks massive. And so he's very well conditioned, which gives that
illusion. Jason Kalipa looks jacked as hell.
And he might be 205.
Yeah.
Yeah, these guys are 200 pounds. And in the bodybuilding powerlifting industry, that's small. But these guys are very muscled, very conditioned, well conditioned, their body fat.
I think it's interesting you mentioned that they're like well balanced.
That's a
good observation, because now that I think about it, they're not. No one's like overly big, and one, you know, it's not somebody who has this giant upper back like you might see in like powerlifting or something like that.
Yep. And it has a lot to do with the fact that they do a lot of they train very often, and they train relatively heavy. I know there's some
intensity and frequency is relatively high.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah. And hypertrophy is benefited from those you know, the law of repeated bouts, and they repeat a lot of bouts.
Right. Exactly.
And even the two a day type of training, the morning and night for the shorter duration times, is more beneficial than these 2.5 hour workouts.
Yeah, you did that to get your pro card, right?
Yeah, that's the way we train. And then they fuel themselves. You don't hear of a female CrossFitter cutting calories. You know, she's not eating egg whites and broccoli.
Yeah,
she's eating meat. She's eating
avocados.
Yeah, yeah. They're taking in a good amount of protein. They're taking in some very highly nutrient dense, very biologically available foods.
A lot of them, like peanut butter, almond butter, that kind of shit.
Yeah, they take in a lot of fats, taking a lot of proteins, taking a lot of animal proteins as well.
Of course, they're going to need the carbohydrates to be able to recover from two workouts.
You have to. And I think that was kind of one of the initial things with the initial problems with CrossFit is that people were kind of afraid of certain carbohydrates.
Because
you look behind the scenes and see what they're actually eating, and they're eating plenty of carbohydrates. And you need that to fuel those workloads and to be that strong.
I think that is a difference between some of the top-level CrossFitters and some people that do CrossFit. You know, like Rich Froning is a CrossFitter.
Yeah. And he'll drink a gallon of milk a day.
Yeah. And Oreos. Like, they followed him around for a whole day in the documentary, and he, like, hammered out some kind of crazy workout, chugged some milk, ate two Oreos.
Yeah.
3 hours later, he's bench pressing.
You know, for his hobby, he's, like, hunting and shit. Like, he's very physical. He's always doing something. So
I've always said the workload drives the process. If you're going to train at that level, you're going to need to fuel it, and you have
might
to
need a couple Oreos.
a box. A calorie surplus becomes necessary for performance improvement over time. Mm-hmm. And these guys, they aren't afraid to fuel themselves.
Right.
And guys and girls. In particular, I look at the female athletes because they've set a new standard.
I look at them for other reasons.
You know, I hear some people you know, when they're trying to lose weight, you know, you don't even want to get into these conversations sometimes. It might be like a relative or a friend or something. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, it's, 1 o'clock, and all I had was one meal. I had one small breakfast. And you're just like, wow, that is so, like, fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about that?
The shame of that is that, and we talk about the women in CrossFit eating more animal proteins, more carbohydrates, and working with more heavy resistance type of training, you know, the multi-joint mass-building exercises. And then you cross over into the bodybuilding industry, which has been dieting women for competition for, 50 years?
Yeah, right.
And we're no better at it today, generally speaking.
Right.
There's some of us that have figured it out.
When the women are probably, similar, right? I mean,
pretty similar.
You want the girls are
lean and
muscular
and tight. Yeah, all your shape comes from muscle. But the point being is that now there's all of these internet trainers that will restrict calories and implement a lot of endurance cardio. So now you have
smaller them on T3 and whatever the hell else.
Yeah. Well, now you have athletes that have less muscle, you know, because the endurance cardio, the steady state cardio, is obviously going to eat away at muscle tissue. And they've starved themselves to the point where, you know, now they're going to rebound off of that.
Right.
Set up an eating disorder.
It's frustrating. And that's what's happened in so many cases. If your trainer's answer to every, you know, week over week of your training, every next effort to try and improve is to cut more calories and increase more cardio, you need to punch him in the throat. That guy should not be giving advice.
Right.
Because
come here, Smelly.
At some point, if you're under 1,200 calories and doing 2 hours of cardio a day,
there's something
now you're damaged.
There's something really wrong.
There's something wrong. You can't come back from that. And you just have to look at those CrossFit women. Or in my case, when I was learning about this, I was looking at in college, I was looking at the sprinters and the way they ate and trained.
Jacked.
And their physiques, the way they looked. Yeah. A high-level high school or collegiate sprinter, man or woman, had phenomenal physiques, and they were hardly even lifting weights back then. This was 25 years ago. They weren't doing a lot of weightlifting.
Yeah, and they're jacked.
They were doing,
what the fuck?
You know, they would do the plyos and the stairs. They were getting a lot of good resistance work, but it was usually through body
different
weight stuff, explosive stuff. But and they were eating. They were eating. None of them, you know, starved themselves on egg whites and broccoli. So
yeah, Keith Williams, that used to train, was a high-level sprinter.
High-level sprinter, and Dino Filion, you know,
probably fairly easy for him to transfer over into some bodybuilding, right?
Yeah, really easy. Yeah. It's pretty common sense. You got to feed them. Women, you need to feed them. You get under 1,200 calories and can't figure out why you're not getting the shape that you want.
Right.
You're getting skinny fat, you know, and muscle provides so much shape. And pound for pound, muscle is smaller than fat. So you want to keep driving the build of muscle and stop looking at the scale and start looking at the tape measure and start looking at your metabolism.
The goal is pretty much always to have more muscle.
Absolutely. And if you listen to the really smart people in the industry, Lane Norton with his reverse dieting, that is where ultimately the goal is. When you get an athlete
But look at how he performs. I think he has like a fucking world record, right?
Yeah, USAPL. Sure, American.
Maybe
record.
An American record. I mean,
yeah.
He's squatting over 650 or so.
670, I think he just squatted.
Well over 7.
And is that knee? That's knee sleeve,
that's
maybe?
That's knee sleeves, USAPL, yes. IPF Worlds.
That's amazing. Lifetime natural as well, which is a huge thing to accomplish.
You can get shredded up. You know, it's impressive.
The whole reverse dieting thing's easily relatable for me because one of the first times I came in, or not the first time, but for years, Mark's been preaching to me like, get the strongest you can with the least amount of work. Not meaning be lazy, but if you can do 3 sets of 5 and get stronger, why do 10 sets of 10? You're just going to hurt yourself. Same thing with eating. You want to be as big and as lean as you can with eating the most amount of food.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to recover.
Yeah, it just makes for a more efficient engine, too. And if you drive those proteins, if you keep driving the proteins, and they're so efficient and they're so, you know, they increase your metabolism, that you can eat more and more calories without gaining weight.
What are some tricks to get in, you know, this amount of food for people that aren't, you know, people that are listening to this now and they're like, fuck, man, I need to eat more. How do you get these meals in? I know like meal prep is a big part of it, but are there some easy tips? Is there any easy route at all?
The types of food or just the preparation in general?
Both.
You know, people who make...
Like what are some things you do to make your life a little
easier? I'll go out in the morning. I've put on my Instagram a picture of what my grill looks like. It's 6 o'clock in the morning and it's 7 o'clock in the morning and it's loaded with New York steaks and bison burger.
Right.
And I'll cook a full day's food or so.
Maybe 2 or 3 days worth, perhaps.
Yeah, I'll just Ziploc bag it and throw it in the fridge, and now I'm 3 minutes away from a meal at any time.
And your neighbors wake up hungry.
Yes.
Yeah. What are
smells great?
A little more specific. You mentioned New York. Are there any like cuts that you avoid or?
It depends on the athlete. Now, New York's kind of a mid-range for me.
Yeah, ribeye gets a little fatty.
Ribeye for ectomorphs is a great choice. Yeah. A top sirloin for an endomorph is a great choice. And I'm always going to focus on red meat because it's so high in B vitamins and iron and vitamin D and creatine. And I like the cholesterol base of it. It's more nutrient dense than, say, a chicken breast. And, of course, the iron that you get from red meats is heme iron. So it's 100% utilizable. It's bioavailable.
Right.
You're going to use all that iron as opposed to eating spinach. And then you mentioned
vegetables are for sissies, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, salad is what my food eats. I've said that many times. And the point with vegetables is not to not eat them. I eat vegetables.
Right.
I'll smother them with butter.
Yeah.
But the point is that if it becomes too large a percentage of your food for the day, it's going to impede protein absorption. It's going to leach valuable nutrients from the body. It's going to decrease the rate at which you can absorb the food. So
which,
now you've got to go longer without a meal.
Which may be the goal if you're going to get on stage for bodybuilding because you need your stomach to be full.
Or you're less, so.
You're eating
you
less
have
food
a,
for a little
a
while.
Discipline problem with hunger.
Yeah,
and
okay,
that, and usually that's caused by, that toxic hunger is caused by those excess carbohydrate consumption,
right,
leading to more and more and more desire for more carbohydrates. Or with drastic restrictions on food, you find people, they just get these overpowering cravings because
right,
they've been told to eat egg whites and tilapia. And so
right,
you have to be able to let someone eat the types of foods they like to eat, watch the quantities, you know, and set something up that's if it's an average person.
Right.
And you mentioned that, you know, about the average person being maybe those nutritionists are setting up diets that are more beneficial to longevity.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to be cautious, because what is longevity? Is it a length of life or is it a quality of life?
Yeah.
And are you more or less susceptible to, say, doctor's visits for ailments over the years if you're eating a ton of vegetables or a ton of meat?
Yeah.
And, you know, what we found is that people who tend to retain more lean body mass later in life tend to be healthier people.
That's what I tell people when they talk shit on me and Mark, like even drinking a Monster or something. Like, all right, so yeah, maybe there's some things in this white Monster that aren't so great for you. And me and Mark are leaner than the average American. We eat well 90% of the time. We exercise harder than 99% of the population. I think this one little white Monster is going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, and clearly the studies show that in the elderly population, those who carry more muscle tissue have fewer problems than those who don't. They live longer. They have a better
quality. What do they do in a lot of those homes and stuff? They have them walking. They have them trying to exercise.
Squatting, deadlifting, overhead pressing.
Yeah, doing whatever they can. That's what they did with my dad. My dad, you know, he was in the hospital for like 70-plus days, and the first thing they had him do was squat. You know, they're like, all right, Mr. Bell, grab onto your walker and just bend your knees. I'm like, they're having you do squats.
Yeah. You know? Well, I went over to my pop's house, and I set up a little Reebok step, and I brought him a band.
Reebok.
He had his, see how I got the plug in there?
Couldn't have been a regular step.
Yeah,
Couldn't have been a chunk of wood.
Pause for a moment for a message from our sponsor, thecooler.com. So I took him a Reebok. So he just had hip surgery, right? And so shortly after hip surgery, of course, the next day they've got you walking on a walker.
Right.
You got to put load on it. You got to put weight on it. We talked about that, active recovery.
Yep.
So I took him, a Reebok step and some bands. So he could put a little band under his foot and start to get some resistance, do some pulls. I showed him a few exercises and, that kind of thing.
Is he into it or is he grumpy about it?
No, he was into it, now he walks a mile every morning with a dog. And,
that's great.
I also changed his diet drastically. Now, this might be an aside, but my pops has macular degeneration, so it's bleeding in the back of the eye. And so
65, 70?
84.
Oh, there you go.
So one of the things with macular degeneration is bleeding in the back of the eyes. They don't want you to take aspirin. Well, another thing they don't want you to take is omega-3s, fish oil, because it thins the blood.
Yeah. Wow.
And so, the purpose of that story, telling that story when I do my seminars is let's look as an athlete, what is your intent and purpose? You know, you want thicker blood. You want to increase blood volume. So I do stay away from blood thinners, and I do propose a lot of sodium for athletes because it increases blood volume, red blood cell count, thicker blood. Now you're healing faster from your workouts because that's one of the key components to that. You also have more oxygenation, which is another benefit to repeated bouts and workouts and recovering. So, I make these suggestions based on an individual's particular needs, but I think that like we mentioned with the elderly population, when you recommend a restrictive diet that's primarily vegetables and has very little, if any, red meat, you might be doing more harm than good when people start losing muscle tissue over the years. And I don't make these recommendations based on, a political view about how much land it takes to produce food and
grains and such.
All aside from that, I make these recommendations based on the individual, what I think is best for the individual's needs, either as an athlete or as just somebody who wants to be healthy. And they talk about your protein needs being more as you get older. They said that you don't utilize protein as efficiently. Well, that's not necessarily true. The reason you don't utilize as much protein is because you have less muscle tissue. And someone with equal amounts of muscle tissue in their 60s and in their 20s will utilize protein the same.
Right.
It's not age-related necessarily.
They'll also start to – a lot of times elderly people wake up much earlier as they get older, and then they'll also eat a lot less.
Yeah.
So it's like
– Now that muscle wasting occurs because they're eating less. They're more sedentary. So it's really important to keep
eating
fueling.
Less just gets you that much closer to death.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And the stimulus, the muscle stimulus, obviously as you get older, you tend not to use as much resistance training. And obviously you're not going to be in there squatting huge weights when you're in your 60s and 70s. But as you mentioned, with some resistance, just squatting down.
Right.
And keeping your proteins elevated so you can maintain as much muscle tissue as you can for as long a period as you can.
I think it's pretty amazing that our hobby ends up turning into something that we can not only help friends with, but you can help increase the quality of life for loved ones and stuff like that. It ends up being pretty awesome, pretty powerful stuff.
I've trained at a very high level and done a lot of things that aren't the healthiest.
Right.
Including powerlifting. Oh, including bodybuilding. You know, and I've said before that if you're competing
you go so deep into it.
If you're competing at a very high level in any sport, it's unhealthy. Right. I mean, look at the marathon runners dropping in their
Even CrossFit. You know, CrossFit, you would think that CrossFit's extremely healthy because of the way that a lot of the people look.
Huge toll on the body.
Yeah,
huge
stress
toll
is
on
stress.
The cardiovascular system. Huge toll on the musculature system.
Right.
And huge toll on the digestive system and the organs just from having all that breakdown of muscle tissue constantly at such a high level. So, yeah, you do put yourself in that area. You look at all the football players that are limping around, and linemen that can't walk upstairs, et cetera, et cetera. You're damaged knees and joints and surgeries. That's very different. But the nutrition aspect that fuels into that, and the basis of that, the exercise component, should be lifelong. It is the fountain of youth.
Right.
And I see it over and over again when I see guys in their 60s, even 70s, that will come into the gym and train and just be as stout as can be and as firm a handshake as you can imagine and as coherent as because they're in there exercising, doing resistance training, and they are eating, a balanced meal with good proteins. And so, it's the fountain of youth. I think you'll have a better quality of life. If the goal is measured by who lives to 100, then, I'm not sure if that quality of life is factored in there.
When I first met you, didn't have any children at that point, and now you have two. What does that change for you?
Well, obviously, I don't hang around at 290. 300 pounds anymore.
Right.
Because
So is the goal now to just kind of get smaller, healthier?
The goal now is just to be healthier, and
that's kind of more for them than anything else.
As you age, you're not going to retain as much muscle tissue, and particularly as you decrease the amount of food that you consume. Right. That's a key component. Some of the most savage athletes, and we talked about this before, have these voracious appetites. The Ronnie Coleman's, the Kai Greens, who were we talking about? Who's Misha talking about the other day? 400-pound guy that deadlifts 9-something, Eddie Hall. So, to fuel that kind of workload, obviously you're going to have to take in 5, 6, 10, 12,000 calories a day. And I always love when a retired athlete, be it a WWE guy or a pro bodybuilder or a pro strongman, just a couple, 3, 5 years after they've retired, everybody wants to make these comments about the fact that they went from 300 to 250 or 240 or 230. They're like, oh, he must have got off the sauce. Well, he stopped eating 10,000 calories a day is really what happened, because that is part of the process. Just to be a 300-pound lineman, you're going to have to eat an enormous amount of calories to endure that workload and to fuel that amount of muscle. And as soon as you cut that back from 6,000 to 5 to 4 to 3, you're going to lose enormous amount of weight. Hopefully, mostly body fat. You do some sort of exercise to stimulate. If you keep eating like that and aren't training, you're going to be the fat fuck. This is going to happen.
Plenty of that happens too.
Yeah.
You look at like Michael Strahan, like The Rock, and guys like that. They've gotten in better shape as they've gotten older.
Yeah.
They've lost weight. They've gotten leaner and leaner.
Yeah. But The Rock's 250 now.
Yeah.
He was pushing 300 for a long time.
Especially when he played football.
Football. Yeah. He looks great, feels great. I understood
a couple TV shows.
Yeah, he's
movies.
Doing all right. He'd make a few bucks.
Yeah,
I understood when I walked up a flight of stairs and got winded that wasn't terribly healthy, but it made me a savage powerlifter.
Yeah,
and I got that. I understood that, and I didn't get.
But you did that for weeks at a time.
Yeah,
I mean maybe 2-3 months you'd push it, try to get as big as you could for powerlifting meet, and then you would drop weight again, right?
Yep, absolutely. And Misha talked a little bit about that, too. He talked about the fact that you only peak for particular meets, and the fewer of those meets you peak for, the better.
Yeah.
Because the body, and Boris talked about that, too, cycling, so that even some of the meets, you're not at peak performance. You expect to only do 90% of your total, and you kind of save that for the world championships or something to really try and break records.
Silent Mike here kind of always said that he doesn't want to get married, doesn't want to have kids. And I think you were that way, right?
Oh, I was that way, for the longest time.
You were single-ish when I first met you, I think?
Selfish.
Single-ish is a great term.
Yeah.
That's a T-shirt.
Yeah.
I had a couple other factors involved there. As an entrepreneur, you tend to be pretty high risk. you tend to roll the dice. You tend to bet everything, you know, on every deal, and you know you're just right. You're usually running in debt or pretty close to falling off a cliff at any given time.
Yeah, and also being married, there's an opportunity to lose half almost immediately at some point, right?
yeah. And I just considered that my personality was such with the powerlifting and with the entrepreneurship or the bodybuilding, et cetera, that I was so focused on being successful at those things that I would not be a good dad. I wouldn't have the time to spend with my children that they deserved. And you know, you can be great at anything, but not at everything.
Right.
And I just thought that would, probably compromise my potential or performance. It might make me make safe decisions. And as an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily want to make safe decisions. You know, you got to take risks. You got to take a lot of risks.
Right.
So I was, I was hesitant. I was 45 when I had, 44 when I had my daughter.
Yeah.
And I think I did one meet after that because I was already en route to that goal. And but now everything's changed. You know, fortunately, I was at an age where I couldn't compete anymore necessarily.
How old are you now?
47 now, almost 48. So I was kind of well past my window of opportunity.
What has it done for you, like at home, like home life? Like what's that's got to be, you know, that's got to be a kick in the ass, right?
No, I tell you what, it's a blessing. It's amazing the difference. And I was in a seminar in Australia, and somebody asked me, said, you know, looking back on all the things that you've done, you know, what's the highlight for you? And having kids.
Yeah.
That was the highlight for me. Everything else seems so unimportant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The records that the squats, the bodybuilding shows, whatever, it all seems so unimportant now.
Yeah.
Even with respect to work, I would never, at the sacrifice of the time I get to spend with my family, put the same amount of time and energy into a career or a new business that I used to.
Well, it's probably good that things happened the way that they did then, because if you were so submerged and you had a child at that time, things may have been different. If you had a child when you were 35, it might have been harder.
Dad said last night, I talked to your dad for a bit, and he said when he worked
He's fucking amazing, isn't he?
Amazing. and he just hit it right on the head. He said when he worked for IBM, he had a family, he had kids, and family came first. And they wanted him to work, you know, double shifts, triple shifts. And he came in and he dropped his ID badge off and he says, I quit. He says, you know, the senior vice president goes home at 5. I'm going home at 5. So I'm not going to stay here till 9, 10 o'clock at night. I have a family. And he said, so, you know, I would go home and you know, maybe my kids would be in bed by 9 o'clock. He said, I'll come back to work after 9 o'clock. But I'm not going to miss that opportunity, that time with my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when I was starting my businesses, and even when I was working for other people, I had worked so many hours, 7 days a week, you know, from dark to dark.
Right.
And it was at the sacrifice of everything else, but I didn't have a family then. So, you know, everything to me was the almighty dollar, making my business successful, making money. Right. But I couldn't do that now.
There's company no founders typically work between 70 and 90 hours a week.
Yeah, it's
just to not have a regular job.
Right. And it's stressful having to make payroll instead of getting a paycheck.
Right.
You know, it's having to make ends meet. And even now, I have the resources to fund my cooler business. But I don't look at it that way. It has to stand on its own 2 feet. It's not a hobby. I'm not supplementing it. Some people will start a tanning parlor or something, and their husband will $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 into
it.
You always
tell me.
That's not a business.
You always tell me.
They call that a lifestyle business.
Right.
You always tell me that this is less expensive. You know, I do it this way because it's less expensive. It's cheaper. You know, like a lot of times you'll stay at like an extended stay so that you can cook your own meals. You don't have to eat out all the time. You're like, it's way cheaper. Or you bought a cooler. And you threw all your food in there, and you're like, I might just like leave this here, but it's still cheaper than me going and spending $20 per meal.
When I land, I go straight to a Walmart, and I buy a rolling cooler, and I fill it full of all the food I'm going to eat.
It's too lazy to carry it.
Yeah, it's a rolling cooler, and I'll throw some ice on top of it, and that thing will last for. I might have to throw another ice bag in there, but it'll last me the whole weekend for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
I wheel it in with me to the expo. I take it home. If I've got an extended stay, I've got some bacon and some chicken breasts in there. I can cook that up at the hotel room. A lot cheaper than restaurants.
And it allows you to eat and stay on your plan.
It allows me to stay on my plan. One of the things I have trouble with at restaurants in particular, and we didn't talk too much about this, is vegetable oils. Now, vegetable oils to me are caustic. I mean, they just wreak havoc on my digestive system, right. particularly canola oil, corn oil, things like that.
I remember eating with you before, and you kind of said, no, you always tell them specifically, no oil. Then they probably just spit on your food or jerk off on it or something.
Yeah.
Which has its own benefits.
Or both.
Well, they're horrendous. They're horrible. The vegetable oils, and you know that was
Mike's whole body is based on that.
Yeah,
vegetable and oil.
Any restaurant you go to, they cook everything in it, and they mix it in with everything, the sauces and all other stuff. And so I have to stay away from that. There's not too many restaurants I can eat. I always ask them, is it flame grilled, or do you do that on a fryer? Because if they do it on a fryer, they're dumping it in a big pile of canola oil, and it just wreaks havoc on my system. A lot of people are allergic to it, a good percentage. And it can cause all kinds of stomach distress, and it's so I try and stay away from that, and that's why I try and manage a whole lot of my own foods or go places that I'm pretty sure can give me the meals that I want.
Let's go back to the kids for a second. Were you changing diapers and stuff like that? I guess you still have. Wait, or how old are your kids?
Melania's three. Yeah, my daughter's three. My son's one.
Right.
In a couple of months.
So you're wiping up some poop and stuff.
That's interesting. I'm gotten pretty good at that.
Well, you're like, how in the hell did they poop all the way up their back?
Yeah,
kind of amazing.
Well, no, I'll be honest with you too. And this is all part of the same thing. From the time I started training, my first weightlifting class in college, the instructor said, look at your poop. And that, in terms of
John Anderson did a video about that
in terms
recently.
Of how your diet
the
affects,
corn test.
Yes, how your diet affects your poop. And so it's always been of interest to me, bowel movements in general.
This is
good stuff. I'll try not to get too specific.
No, let's get specific.
I know by the foods I eat how that's going to affect me, and I make changes to my diet based on that because I don't want to have all these problems.
Right.
I don't just eat anything to eat anything. I know how foods affect me, and I make recommendations based on that, based on my experience, but I also ask people to try and make those determinations for themselves. When you eat particular foods, how do they feel on you? You know, and that's kind of what I'm asking.
How do
they feel coming out of you?
Right,
is what I'm asking.
So you're gassy and everything else.
Yeah, some stuff can look good on paper, but like if you're miserable, if your gut is miserable, if you can't stay out of the bathroom, then it's probably not beneficial.
Right. And so here I am now. I get to experiment on my kids. First me, and then my athletes, and now on my kids. And I can tell by certain foods I feed them, and by the results of the diaper.
You're like, oh, that didn't go well.
What I do and don't want them to eat. And I find that things like white flour products or vegetable oil kind of products makes things worse.
Yeah.
And when I feed them things like I'll go out and grill up a little bison burger, that makes things great. You know, and a little string cheese instead of a dessert or something for a snack, or a whole fat yogurt. Then they're more consistent, and things look better, and I'm not having to clean up as much of a mess. So I carefully watch those kinds of things. I do feed my kids a higher fat food, an animal-based protein source,
and
I keep their simple sugars low and their white flours low.
They get some typical stuff like other kids, like ice cream, mac and cheese, stuff like that here and there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm not too.
Yeah, not too nuts.
I'm not overbearing it. I try and make sure and include.
Right,
rather than
so you're not building any excluded. Little Marinoviches.
Right.
And then what about the 16-year-old?
Oh, wow. Well, Denzel's, he's a sophomore in high school, and he's 6'1", 305 pounds.
Damn.
He's a monster. And, just a couple of years ago, I looked at his ID card from 2 years ago when he was in junior high school, and it's amazing the difference. But that was about the time that he started playing football, started exercising. Before that, he didn't really have an interest in sports and wasn't exercising. And, one of the things that hurt me in high school was I was dieting for wrestling all the time.
Right.
And I was playing soccer, and so I had a lot higher workload than I had food intake. And so I was underweight, and I was running around at 100, 110, 115 pounds all the time because I'm trying to stay in my weight class, and I'm overtraining, under-eating. Another thing that does is that delays your puberty. If you aren't taking in enough food, you're not sending the signal to your body that you're prepared.
Yeah.
So it was a senior in high school before I even had puberty and grew up. And they say, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Was that your natural biological clock, or did you impede that?
Yeah.
And so I'm really cautious when I talk to parents about feeding their kids, that they're careful not to restrict You know, they're afraid of things like whole fat milk. They're afraid of things like bacon. They're afraid of things like butter.
But they're not afraid of Happy Meals.
Right.
Well, and with the activity level of a kid, you know, that especially a kid that's playing sports, probably shouldn't have too many restrictions.
No. And you know, we've been taught for so long by all of the media that, you know, to stay away from these animal-based saturated fats, the cholesterol-based animal fats. Yeah. And they're so hugely beneficial, not just for us, but for our children, both infants and pubertal. And, you know, not to get those kinds of nutrients when you need them during those very important times, mm-hmm. I think can impede your growth. And most importantly, I think it can impede your growth of your brain, which cholesterol is largely attributed to having right. advanced the size of your brain.
Yeah.
And
flipping what you said, like I think that girls are hitting puberty earlier because they weigh more. They say it's about 100 pounds. And so yeah. you have girls hitting puberty at 8 or 9 years old now yeah. because they're heavy, because their diet hasn't been well managed by their parents.
Right.
And one of the things that drives me nuts is people say, well, my kid won't eat this, or my kid won't eat that, or my kid won't eat, period.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, they'll eat.
Yeah.
You give them food, they'll eat.
There's certainly downsides to overeating, and right. there's downsides to undereating or restricting, or thinking that a healthy diet means in the absence of something that could be vitally important. In right. my case, I'm talking about fats and cholesterol.
Right.
And so, you know, I missed that opportunity when I was in high school to have competed at a high level in most sports because I was so undersized. I had to find weight-related sports like wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And even in soccer, I was too small. When I got my college scholarship, yeah. my coach told me, you need to put on weight. He couldn't put me on the field at 135 pounds.
Right.
You know, I get pushed all around out there.
So, Stan, you're too much of a bitch for soccer.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Gain some weight.
So that was one of the lessons that I think that I learned early on about getting in enough.
Why do you look so fat nowadays, you think? What do you weigh now? 250?
Now I'm at 250. Yeah, I stay right at 250. I'm
happy. How's that feel as opposed to, you know, when you were like 290 and powerlifting?
Yeah, it feels great. Although I watched a video of me squatting the other day. I posted on my Instagram when I was pause squatting 600, and it was just like nothing.
Yeah.
And I remember the feeling at the time. It was just
You did like an 8-something squat, too.
55 or something with the – I was with Chad Smith. Fast and explosive, but I had a belly on me.
Yeah.
You know, I had put a decent amount of weight on at the time. But I remember how I felt. I felt horrible.
Still looked like cinder blocks underneath your shirt, though.
Yeah, you know, the abs sit on top. All that fat is in and around your organs. It's liver fat. It's, you know, it's interstitial fat all around your large intestine. And you can have all the abs you want, but if you've got a 42-inch waist, that's still a problem.
I remember we had a picture of you weighing in, and Spencer was weighing you in, and your abs were just bigger than his entire body.
Yeah, yeah. And my waist was still 42 inches, you know, because I was 287 or so and just dropped water for the weight cut.
Right.
So it's still unhealthy. It's still unhealthy, I think, regardless of how much muscle you're showing, when you have that much fat around your organs. You know, it's something that you should tackle, I think. And we talked about this the other day, and I said, look, I know I competed at a very high level, and I for a lot of years, well past what I probably should have, up until I was 45 years old. And there's no bigger prude than a reformed prostitute, I say. You know, you always hear them out preaching, you know,
right,
everybody
right,
else.
Right, right.
I'm just saying, at some point, and you decide what that point is for you, whether you're in your late 30s or 40s,
or at least have the just have the knowledge, you know, so you know what to do afterwards.
Yeah, at some point that you may need to redefine yourself. You may want to look at another opportunity in life rather than just seeing how much you can lift. I worked with an athlete about a year ago, Dan. I forget Dan's last name. He came into the gym and he
Green?
Was yeah. Well, he came into the gym and he wanted to do one last meet. Well, he was over 50, and he was still really heavy. And he ended up having some very serious problems. And he started bleeding, internal bleeding and coughing and everything.
Wow.
Ended up in the hospital. And, you know, we had a heart-to-heart after that and said, look, it's time. You know, what are you chasing and at what cost? Is it going to cost you?
Yeah, what's it for?
Yeah, what's the cost-benefit ratio here involved in? You know, and in this sport, of course, you don't get paid for it. So, but if that's the only way you define yourself,
right,
is how much you can bench or how much you can squat, and you're up into your mid-40s and 50s, and you're 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight, and suffer from, you know, probably borderline type 2 diabetes and,
right.
You know, high cholesterol and a host of other
something's
problems.
Something's got to give somewhere.
Something's got to give. And at some point, you have to redefine yourself and decide what you know, what's more important to you. So, and I've talked to a number of athletes recently, and it's names I won't mention, who are heavy and have followed our recent path.
Right.
And mine, being 10 years older than you, was necessary. Yours was strictly by choice to change, to redefine yourself.
To stop being so fucking fat.
Yeah.
He just wanted to be like me.
So I don't want to preach to anybody. What I'm saying is that there are opportunities. You know, we do have, you know, different chapters in our lives, and
it is
it feels pretty amazing to
be. It's similar to starting a business. You know, I think it
has evolution.
People get excited and they want to start. You know, even something as small as just doing some T-shirts or something. But like, what's the path for that?
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, what are some changes you're going to make? And is there some sort of like end game, exit strategy? Do you want to sell up to somebody big? Do you want, you know, which route do you want to go? And I think I don't hear that enough from powerlifters. I'd like to hear it more because the sport can be dangerous when you're, especially when you're at the top of your game. I love seeing the big lifts just as much as anybody else. Yep. I love seeing someone's nose burst with blood. I think it's just kind of part of the game, and I like seeing the intensity and all those different things. But
there's a time and place for it.
Yeah, you're going to have a strategy to get the fuck out of the game at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah, well, and what you mentioned about business is like if you're putting more into it than it's given you, it's a hobby business.
Yeah, it
should
evolve.
The same with powerlifting.
Right.
Like, it's really a hobby. Like, yeah, Mark built kind of a company off of it. You build a business off of it. So maybe you could say the sport's given back to you as much as you gave it. But like at a young age, my family's sick, man. Like there's heart disease throughout my whole family. Like I run sprints 4 times a week because if I deadlifted 800, it wouldn't make me progress anywhere in life.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just for, you know, bodybuilding, powerlifting.
But right.
This is the recommendation I make for anybody who's out of shape at any age. My business partner was a college football player and he was 225, 230 pounds. Played college football. Now, all these many years later, in his mid-40s, he hit me up a couple months ago. He was 292 pounds.
Damn.
Now, not a single man in his family has lived out of 50.
Oh, shit.
They've lived out of their 50s.
Right.
His dad, his uncles, none of them. And he has type 2 diabetes now as a result of his weight.
Right.
You know, so I moved him down, and we spent a couple months dropping him down to 255 or 260
wow.
or something. So we peeled 30 pounds off of him, got him on some metformin, gradually got him off of that. So now his blood sugars are stabilized. But the point is it can be for anybody. You know, and I get emails all the time from people who aren't competitors. Training partners of mine in the past, business partners of mine in the past, who are now in their 50s, who had never used hormones, who had never used testosterone, call me up in their 50s and like, oh, man, I feel terrible. I'm weak and I'm tired. And I went to the doctor. He said, my testosterone's at 100. And I said, well, what are you going to do about that? And he goes, well, I was thinking about getting on testosterone. I said, well, okay.
Yeah.
And then what? You
right.
know, you know, and to continue to exercise is my point, to continue to eat healthy and, you know, lose some body.
It's going to have other things along with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's an individual who's never used anything their whole life, you know, and they wake up tired and they're 50 years old. They're a little bit overweight and their testosterone's low. And it's, you know, it's time. It's time for you to correct your deficiencies. It's time for you to exercise regularly. It's time for you to eat, you know, some decent meals. And you know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be consistent.
Right.
You know, you can't splurge on a pizza every other day.
Well,
sit on your ass all day long every day and expect to make progress. You just be consistent. Do
if you
something.
Were to try to attach a percentage to it, you know, how consistent does somebody have to be? You know, if they're hitting their mark about 80% of the time, is that?
I think so. I think so. It's when you start falling off, and usually one binge becomes two and three, and then that's kind of the status quo.
Yeah.
Usually one or two missed workouts becomes, you know, a few weeks.
Of course.
You know, I'm just getting back into it. I never understood that, getting back into it.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing builds on consistency. It's not about one or two great workouts or one or 2 weeks or one or 2 months. It's just about consistency. And so if you do anything consistently, and that's why I always recommend that you find something you enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who goes in and tries I'm going to join the gym. Well, what for? Well, I want to get in shape. It's like, well, will you do it? You know, and will you do it consistently? Is the gym your place of choice? I lift because I love to lift. You know, right. We've just been passionate about all our lives. Since we picked up a magazine when we were 12 years old.
And it's been our thing.
Right. And as we can use our thing to be healthy now, right. After all of our efforts to be
strong and big,
then it's a benefit to us because we get to do what we like. And so that's what I talk to my friends about, whether it be CrossFit. My wife, she go to the gym and work out really hard, but feels kind of empty about it.
Right.
So recently she joined a CrossFit group. So now she's got other people she can train with, compete with. She's got numbers that she can, you know, I want to do this in less time. I want to do this with more weight. And so it becomes more, challenging and entertaining for her.
Right.
So she's, you know, she loves that.
That's really important, you know, for people, not just women, just people in general, to find where they fit in, you know, because not everyone is going to just have such goals that they're burning with desire to pick up weights every single day. So for you, it might be you find a powerlifting gym or you find a CrossFit gym or you find maybe a gym that does classes or something to that effect. But whatever it is, it's something that you can get into.
Yeah. Or you play tennis. I mean, or you jog. I mean,
yeah,
I talk about that. I don't like steady state cardio. But if you love to jog. You know, do something. Just come home and do a few, you know, deep knee bends and some banded curls or whatever.
Some push-ups here and there.
Some push-ups and chin-ups here and there is about all you wanted to throw in. But it's something, you know. It's just activity in general.
Right.
We had a letter sometime in the last week, actually to Mark, that I haven't really shared with him yet, when an older guy. And it's basically the same kind of situation that you're describing.
It was from Stan.
I've been through a lot of really negative life events. And essentially what he was asking for, well, the way I took it was, how do I turn my life around? And basically, do you give me your permission to do hormone replacement therapy?
Who needs permission? If you've got low testosterone, go get on testosterone.
This is exactly the point. And I mean, it was kind of heartbreaking because he really had been through a lot of stuff and looked up to the Bigger, Stronger, Faster movie and the people and what went into creating that and things that we've done since then and all that. But really, he was looking for somebody to say, is it okay?
Right.
I hate that about testosterone. And let me say,
the hurdle of it being illegal.
I understand that everybody has this preconceived notion, or not everybody, but most people, the vast majority. And it's been villainized in the media, et cetera, for all these years. And I get that. But if you're in your 50s or what have you, and you have low testosterone, here's what you understand about the research. If you take two groups of people, one's low in testosterone and one's not. And the group that is low in testosterone goes and works out every single day. The group that is not low in testosterone, you just feed them some more food, they gain more muscle. So exercising doesn't cure the problem. In the absence of testosterone, you're investing, like we said, what's your return on the investment? Do as little as you have to do to get the result. You know, we talk about all these kinds of things.
Right.
You're not going to get any result from lifting weights if your testosterone is low.
Right.
It's like trying to get a 12-year-old to put on muscle.
Right.
It doesn't happen. You know, you do the exercises to teach technique and flexibility and, you know, get them to learn about their bodies, whatever. But they're not going to put on weight. They're not going to put on a lot of muscle and a lot of size and a lot of strength from that. So that's frustrating. When you have a deficiency corrected, if you're deficient in iron, you need to get more iron. If you're deficient in thyroid, it seems to be no problem for women in particular. It's probably overprescribed because you're low in thyroid. You realize, hey, that's going to cause you to have a hard time burning fat. If you have a deficiency in something corrected, deficiency in testosterone corrected, and don't subject yourself to these, all this media hysteria about testosterone supplementation. My doctor suggested my 84-year-old dad get on testosterone supplementation.
Yeah.
And particularly around his hip surgery time because of the muscle wasting that you're concerned about.
Right.
So, you know, I don't pass judgment. Yeah, I took testosterone for many years, and so I'll have to be on testosterone the rest of my life, right? That's what people are concerned about. Well, you shut your own testosterone down. Well, guess what? Most of my friends in their 50s, their testosterone's shut down.
Right.
And they're going to have to be on testosterone for the rest of their life.
Exactly.
And they never took anything.
Right.
You know, their whole life. So it's going to happen.
You end up in the same place anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Just the rhino's telling me to hop on.
Mm-hmm. Just because I did it to myself 10 years earlier than you did, that doesn't mean anything. Look, I'm not condoning the use of it, particularly, you know, in your younger years when it's not necessary. I'm just saying at some time when you have a deficiency.
Yeah, and you're talking about replacement therapy for these people. You're not talking about, like, super crazy high doses. You're talking about, like,
absolutely,
feeling normal and maintaining muscle mass. And
but going with that comes that testosterone is no panacea. You can take all the testosterone you want, and if you're not exercising and eating well, you get no result.
Right.
You know, you won't benefit from the increased lean body mass and decreased body fat if you're not eating well and exercising. And I don't like recommending a pill as a solution to every problem.
Right.
Especially on the back of
prescription. Unless it's Anadrol.
Unless, yeah. Especially on the back of prescription.
Can I get an amen?
Prescription thugs coming out.
Right.
You know.
Absolutely.
I've experienced this my entire life. My mother has been an addict her entire life. She's an alcoholic growing up, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, caffeine, nicotine, alcohol. And then when prescription medicine found her, or she found it, you know, you're talking amphetamines such as Adderall, tranquilizers, sleeping pills, painkillers, and it's been horrifying. I've picked her up at the hospital or at the rehab clinic on multiple different occasions since I've moved them to Vegas in the last 2 years, and it's really sad. It's a difficult thing to deal with, and it's killing her.
Yeah.
She's 70 years old and she's very frail. And it's killing her. She has COPD, she has lung disease, and she's smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Wow.
And she'll sit there with her oxygen breather on, smoking cigarettes.
Right.
Doctors will tell her you need to get off of these, tranquilizers, and she's hooked on them, and they have, you know, horrible effects on her. So I'm the furthest guy from recommending that you take a pill in solution to a problem.
Right.
I always
right.
think exercise and nutrition is you know, the first remedy to that. So I just want to be cautious that I've covered all these grounds.
Somebody
here.
Who someone who does have an addiction, I always I realize that there's problems that are more complicated than just exercising, but I'll always stick with it and I'll always stand by. You're going to have to find exercise and nutrition. In my opinion, can solve just about fucking anything.
Well, here's the study: you take metformin, and it's half as effective as exercise alone.
Right.
Remedying, hemoglobin A1C levels, high blood sugar,
right.
and type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I need to say.
So the guy that, sent in the letter, is like, you want to turn your life around, start getting involved in some form of exercise, whether you're going out on a bike or running or something. Mm-hmm. I just think the mental aspect of it is even just underrated, even though they do studies on it all the time, and it always does
prove.
It always does prove that it's beneficial and stuff, but I just think that... I mean, it's changed my brother's life. You know, he had alcohol addiction that he was dealing with and other medications and stuff. And just having goals, having goals and distracting yourself. I mean, that's what those drugs are doing in the first place. They're distracting you from reality.
Yeah, a lot of them.
And they can feel great, that's what they're doing.
A lot of them are manipulating serotonin, which is what you're manipulating when you exercise.
Right.
My older son had a headache disorder as a child, starting at age 12, for years and years and years. And, you try everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
especially for your kids.
Yeah. Shit. One of the things that you try is to try to get them to get more exercise. It's really hard to take a person who's in pain and in your kid and make them exercise.
Right.
But in the end, between, getting older, because they said, the hormonal profile of it will change over time, and very likely you will not have this, past your early 20s. But he also started to exercise. He kind of fell in love with running, and it made an enormous difference. It kind of got him off all the medication, ultimately.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I always want to recommend that as the first solution, your diet and exercise, particularly getting rid of a lot of those simple sugars, et cetera, that can wreak havoc on your body. My mom's subject to that. She never exercises, eats a lot of sugars. And here's brilliant people, smart people who want to be healthy.
Yeah.
They really do. Just for some reason, they get into that trying to find that quicker fix.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then having to take other things to counterbalance the side effects of right. Yeah. So now you have one to get up, one to get down, one for this, one for that.
Anytime that somebody's on more than about three medications from the doctor, they're getting into polypharmacy. They're treating right. side effects with other drugs.
Right.
And that's just dangerous. It's
well,
just
none of
a bad
them
idea.
Work. Over an extended period of time is the challenge.
No, and none of them are supposed to. That's right. the thing that's lost is that most medications are for acute situations and right. not for chronic ones.
Right. But just with the example of the diabetes medication, you know, when you come right. in, doctor says, well, your hemoglobin A1C's skyrocketed. You got type 2 diabetes. You need to get on metformin right away. Well, is that the solution to the problem, or is that a quick intervention? The solution right. to the problem is to lose that 30 pounds of body right. fat. That's the solution. If you know,
yeah,
I understand that there's a lot of disagreement as to whether or not type 2 diabetes can be cured, but certainly you can improve both diabetes and type 2 diabetes just by exercising and reducing body fat. It doesn't necessarily mean you won't be insulin dependent or won't need metformin, but you could certainly use a lot less and have less frequent problems as a result.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for sharing personal stories like that with us. I always think it's important for people to talk about those kind of things. We've got Stan the Rhino Efferding here, inventor, entrepreneur, world-class power lifter, professional bodybuilder, professional ass kicker. And, you know, when you hear
and
the
dad.
Information and dad, soon to be married, we hope. I'm trying to work on him with that. But, he's got like, I don't know, 5 or 6 candidates. It's all,
it's complicated.
We're going to make a reality show. You'll be able to watch it.
Yeah. One mom, one girlfriend, one mom.
There you go. Yeah. We're not in Russia.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
They have a few, right? Anyway, the message is so much more powerful when it comes from someone who lives it. And we always appreciate having you here at Super Training.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Plug away, thecooler.com.
Oh, that's right, thecooler.com.
With a K?
With the K. That's it. Pick one up today.
And at Stan Efferding, is that the
Instagram is at Stan Efferding. You get pictures of my steak on my grill.
There you go.
As long as it's not my meat on your grill.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures of Stan's meat on Instagram.
Yep, there you go. All right, multiply your hustle, multiply your muscle, and may all your shits be tapered. I'm at Mark's Millie Bell on Twitter and Instagram. Later.
At Silent Mike with 2 Ks, Instagram and Twitter. And check out the YouTubes.
I'm Jim McD, STDV, everywhere that I would want you to find me.
STD?
STD, STTV. STTV.
He puts the D in STD.
Exactly. Sexually transmitted. Follow the show on Instagram at Mark Bell's Powercast, Facebook.com/supertraininggym, Twitter at SGGymSack, and all the YouTubes and supertraining.tv. And we're out.
Thank you.
Subscribe to Power Magazine at thepowermagazine.com. If you choose the digital edition, you can catch up on all the great back issues, take your training to the next level with Slingshot products at howmuchyoubench.net, and look for PSN products including NO Explode at bodybuilding.com. Mark Bell's Powercast is a production of supertraining.tv.